Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, we got Patrick Warburton and a very funny news coming up. I've invented a new job for my son that I think you guys are going to enjoy coming up in the news. First, Geico. Oh, these days, everybody's sharing everything. Geico wants to say thanks. Thanks for the dance moves and the DIY haircut fails, but also they'd like to share a little something with you. And that's the Geico Give Back, 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Just visit geico.com/giveback.
I'm your emotional support animal.
It shows just how fucking petrified of the Twitter mob every public figure is nowadays. The fact that they've talked good people who have never harmed anyone into giving preemptive apologies to nut jobs is outrageous.
Written and narrated by Adam Carolla.
Consequently, I'm starting with a warning. I'm not going to apologize for anything in this book.
Pre-order it now at adamcarolla.com.
Patrick Warburton has joined us. Always good to hear from Patrick Warburton. Inheritance, a movie we talked about with Connie Nielsen, is available on Amazon, iTunes, and on demand as well. And also Space Force, which is available on Netflix, which I forgot about. Good to see you, Patrick.
Good to see you, Adam.
I see you. I follow your career because you're pretty ubiquitous. Like, you pop up a lot in a lot of projects and rental car commercials, and it's just, you're just there. But I thought, and it's something I talk to a lot of people about, because as you get, you blink your eyes, you've been doing this for 30 years, you know, and you think, I was talking about this with Kevin Bacon. I was talking about this with Rob Lowe. It's like, do you have to get up and sort of pedal every day? Do you have that feeling of like, I got to get out there and churn and burn? What's your mindset?
Well, a little bit. I'm probably not as ambitious or aggressive as I once was. You know, I'm 55. I like to play golf. I have a family, and I just, you know, you kind of get worn out by the whole process, you know, at times after a while. It's nice when some good opportunities, you know, show themselves, but oftentimes you gotta, you know, fight for things that, you know, to try to get involved in things outside of what, you know, normally you're perceived to do. You know, they put you in a box in this town, you know. Oftentimes it's hard to find opportunities outside of the realm of certain things that you just sort of perceive. For me, it's playing dumb nitwits, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny. So much of it is a physicality. I was doing a Take a Knee episode, my motivational podcast, with Eric Stromer. And we're kind of, Eric was, he's a really good looking dude, you know, and when he was 30 or 26, he was really good looking. He's been on, like, you know, People's Sexiest Men issue and stuff like that. But he's also got a great sense of humor, and he's got a really fun sort of energy to him. But every single audition for him is, you know, put on these shorts, and put on these dolphin shorts and take your shirt off and go do this shitty dialogue, because we're casting for Santa Barbara, the soap opera, you know. And in a way, I said, you know, the great news about looking like me or looking like Jimmy Kimmel's, we got to actually go sit around and figure out what we wanted to do and then go do it. No one was casting us in anything or telling us we want this, but we don't want that. And Patrick is a big, tall, good looking, strapping glass of water. And probably got pushed that way.
I might have been at one time, Adam. It's the looks are fading. But what do you think of the stash? This is, I've never had a stash. I, I can't even take myself seriously when I look in the mirror.
Nice.
It's a lot to take in.
I like it.
It's regal. Like,
yeah, I like it. It gives you a certain gravitas. You know, that, the voice, the 6'2", 6'3", frame. I'm going to believe anything you tell me to do.
Maybe one day I might be able to do my first Western.
Would you like to do your first Western?
I would. I mean, I guess I have. Nah, Flick of Two doesn't really count as a Western.
I'm always interested in those guys. Like, you know, you take guys like Kevin Costner, and they love that era. They love riding horses. They love the boots. You know, they love the guns, the America that was that, you know? And so they go, I'm going to go recreate that for extended periods of time. And therefore, in a weird way, you get to live that life because you're putting on a duster and getting on a horse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
How's the Pearl Jam fanaticism and the Dodge Challenger?
It's all alive and well. You know, of course, my garage band, you know, we haven't been able to rehearse or play in quite some time. But I thought, you know, we're the one band that probably could have played at any point during this pandemic, because I don't think we've ever had a crowd of much more than 20 people. And I think pretty much it's almost been okay to this point.
I want to talk about your band. So I know you're a Pearl Jam fanatic, but I didn't know you had your own band.
Oh, I got a little cover band, a little dad band.
Like on those Cialis commercials?
Yeah.
One black guy.
I mostly do it to humiliate my children. My adult children.
What do you cover? What's your set list?
Well, we'll cover mostly Vedder and, you know, Pearl Jam tunes. We cover some Dylan tunes, but try to do it more in the vein of how Vedder would do it. We do a couple of Tragically Hip songs, some Doors tunes, and we try to mix it up a little bit. So it's not it. We're the Bearded Pearl Clams. We're not. We do.
You know what you should make your alter ego name be?
Yes.
Eddie Vedder.
Oh. If there isn't one already, you've
claimed
that.
There has to be.
I think my favorite Pearl Jam song is Better Man. I just love that song. I love the drums in that song. It's a little raw. It's not overly produced. And it's got such a great theme. It kicks in. It just kicks in. I like songs that have a little slow build and the burn at the beginning and then kick in. Do you guys cover Better Man?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry. But, you know,
thanks for coming.
There's so much depth to the band and Vedder and you know, and everything they do. So, you know, from the Grinders to his ukulele album or to, you know, the soundtrack to In the Wild, there's just so many beautiful songs and nasty ones too. I mean, there's just, they've got an amazing library of about three decades of, you know, music.
So crazy that, you know, in a weird way, I think of Pearl Jam as a new band as opposed to you think about the Doors and Led Zeppelin and all that kind of stuff. But the new band that's been around for 30 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is strange to think about so many of those bands that started just, you know, in the like we don't think of a band like ZZ Top to be like as old as Led Zeppelin, but I think they are, aren't they? I think they were making music at the same time Led Zeppelin was making music. But you associate ZZ Top with, you know, music videos in the 80s. And of course they have a huge, you know, just a huge legacy, a huge breadth of, you know, their library. But I still think of ZZ Top as a much newer band than say Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Well, technically if it was 90 or 95, Pearl Jam could be considered classic rock now.
Yeah.
How does a classic rock thing go? Like, so like they have weird rules. Like in California, if your car can't pass smog, you could get a smog exemption if it's more than 25 years old or something like that. Is there a classic rock cutoff, like 30 years or 25?
Back at the state at the Sound where I worked, it was 25 years.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Patrick, let's talk about you. So, what's a day? Everything shut down in terms of production? Obviously. So, what's a day like for you?
Well, I sort of feel like dorky this sounds, but we sort of made lemonade out of lemons here. We've had all four of our adult kids under one roof for the first time in years, you know, and we got five dogs. So we've hung out an awful lot together as a family, and that's been great. And watched a lot of stuff. We've gotten drunk and done karaoke together, and we sort of live on the outskirts, you know, or a little bit in the country sort of. So, you know, there's nice areas to walk around. So we've been able to get outside. So, I mean, work, you know, nil, but as far as, I feel like we've been, you know, pretty blessed in our situation. I got buddies, you know, in LA, in the middle of LA, like my buddy, John Walk, who's been working on your man Kimmel show for years. He's been on that for the last 20 years. You know, he lives in like a 500, 600 square foot apartment off of Melrose and has not had any contact with another human being for 3 months, and he is losing his mind.
Yeah. Much of it is, you know, I was going to say luck of the draw, but a lot of it is where are you when these things happen? So the very first, thinking about the riots, 1992, I lived in Los Angeles. I was pretty much debt. I was poor. I drove in a Zuzu Trooper. I was a carpenter. And if this shit would have hit, whether it be especially the pandemic, the lockdown, that whole thing, I would have been trapped in a small apartment with an angry lesbian roommate and her angrier cat and had no income and been contemplating suicide somewhere around week 3.5. Now I have a job, I have income, and I live in 7,500 square feet, and I got a swimming pool in the background. No problem.
That's right. And you can work from home. You can just do the show like you're doing it, which is
I'm at the studio, but I can just drive from my house to the studio.
Well, your studio is like your house with
right.
your cars.
Right.
That's an awesome pad you got there. Well, yeah, back, you know, in the early 90s when that all went down, I was trapped in a little apartment in Palms, Culver City with an angry wife. That's who I was.
Not the same wife who's angry today, right?
No, she's the same wife, less angry.
Right. So you think about, like, where are you? It's a lot about timing, you know. It's this lockdown for me, it came later. I was established, so I'm comfortable. So for my kids, it comes earlier, but if it catches you when you're 23 and you're just finishing whatever and you're between jobs and you have the roommate in the crappy little apartment in the neighborhood no one wants to live in, then you're fucked. You're shit out of luck at that point. So much of it is just that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, agreed. I think the kids have actually been all pretty happy that they're here, you know, and that we've all, you know, we've all been able to sort of keep each other entertained for the last few months, because it's, you know, it's been going on for a while where it's, you know, rough to be outside.
What was a 17-year-old high school version of Patrick Warburton like?
Well, listen, and I know, just to preface this, when I was a 13-year-old, I was the smallest kid in high school. I weighed 95 pounds and I had Coke bottle glasses. And I mean, I was, you know, and I had to get bused an hour to school to Servite, which is an all boys school in Anaheim. So that's not fun because I don't fit in there. I can't play football. They recruit football players. I'm not an academic. So I have a miserable day at school. And then when after I get off a 1 hour bus trip home, you know, like there'd be these bullies that would wait and spit on me when I'd be walking home. So it was pretty rough in the early days. Fortunately for me, I had the growth gene and I started growing. And then then life got a little bit easier. It also got a little bit easier for me when I was able to transfer to a local public high school. So by the time I was 17, I was at Newport Harbor High School ditching class to go surfing every now and then with buddies, and feeling like there was a light at the end of the tunnel. So 17, 18 wasn't bad. But that's when, right when things started getting a little bit better for me.
Where did you go off to college? Where did the drama bug come in? When did the acting kick in? How did that all work?
I went to Orange Coast College. I was getting nowhere. I couldn't transfer to any worthwhile university. And I knew that that wasn't really going to be, it just didn't seem like the direction I was headed. And I thought I was narcoleptic because I fell asleep in every class I had. I was rowing crew at the coast, and I also hadn't discovered coffee yet, so I wasn't drinking coffee, and I was just falling asleep in class, and I just bailed out after about three semesters there, and just started hitting the bricks up in L.A. like everybody else does, you know. Yeah.
On auditions?
Yeah. That was even back in the day when, because I guess even then you were already on K-Rock, right? Weren't you already working with K-Rock at the time?
I started with K-Rock in 94.
Oh, okay.
So it wouldn't have been that early, probably.
Well before that. Okay. All right. Well before.
So...
It's funny that Patrick had a crappy apartment in Palms. I too had a crappy apartment in Palms. Feels like everyone I know had a crappy apartment in Palms. And yes, it's on the west side. But Adam, it's in line with the theory of places shouldn't be allowed to name themselves, because Palms sounds right. So nice. It's right. it's a stucco jungle.
It's dicey.
Right.
Yeah. We were on Valparaiso. Did you know that street?
Yeah, I was on Regent, I think, right off of Overland.
By the way,
or motor.
Patrick, watch out, because when you say to folks, I was on Valparaiso, they think it's herpes medication. So just be careful. Don't say it out loud at like a dinner or anything. That's back when I was on Valparaiso.
We were on Valtrek Street. Now I refer to it.
Yeah, I still say the leader in the clubhouse is Hawaiian Gardens. I don't think a better sounding, worse city than Hawaiian Gardens. I don't even really know if I've been to. I think Huell Hauser's been to Hawaiian Gardens, or there's some Hawaiian Gardens something.
I grew up on the border of Hawaiian Gardens.
How bad is Hawaiian Gardens?
Run.
It's rough. I mean, the big highlight is their casino. Mm. I never liked walking through.
What do you think's worse, Garden?
Kaylin lives there now.
Oh, sorry, Kaylin.
Oh no.
What's worse is Gardena? Gardena sounds pretty good too, but is Gardena worse than Hawaiian Gardens?
I think Hawaiian Gardens is known a little bit more for its violence.
Sure.
But great Mexican places on the outskirts.
But you're right. The Samoan people are very aggressive. Very aggressive. I agree. I don't want to categorize, but yes. Thank you.
And by the way, what's more misleading than Riverside?
Mm. Yeah.
Desolate Riverside.
There has to be a sanctioning body. Like, yeah. I can't go into the DMV and go, I want a vanity plate called Kill the Jews. They go like,
way too many letters, sir.
Can't. No, I'd work it out. I'd use a little of my own rainbow tape to modify it. But like... They just go, no, you can't do that. I feel we need to do that with cities. Yeah. I really do. Yeah, Palm sucks. Yeah. And Panorama City sounds like some sort of city of the future. It's like Elon Musk must have invented Panorama City. Panorama City is a shithole.
Jimmy, you're right. Palmdale, 29 palms. Yeah. No more palms.
Yeah, you're not allowed.
I agree.
Well, the old 69 Charger you brought up there, Adam, when I first got, because I wanted to get customized plates for it, you know, just for fun. It said Brock 69. And because I do a cartoon called The Venture Brothers, and Brock Sampson drives a 69 Charger, and that's what we got. So my son said, you got to get this car. And that's when we got the car. And I had to jump through hoops to get the license plate to say Brock 69 because they had issues with it. They thought that 69 that this was some kind of a sex thing. And it's just 69 is the year of the car. And they go, well, we got to check. And the person at DMV went in the back and checked and came back, and eventually they gave me the go ahead. There's the car.
Wow.
What is this? Some kind of sex thing?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's a perfect example. Like, they have to vet it. Now, the thing that I do love about what's that, Patrick? Sorry.
It's a dumb joke. You said they have to vet it. I said it's a Dodge.
Good. Yep.
That's the vet kind of Dodge.
My kids remind me that I need riders, and I.
No, vet is good. It could even been an Eddie Vetter kind of a thing. But the thing that's so precise about the science of the folks who work at the DMV is they go, not so fast. That sounds like a 69 sexual position, and we don't want to send that message out to the public. And then they go, oh, we checked the VIN number. It is a 69 Charger. Go ahead. But what difference does that practically make to the Amish kids who are behind you in a buggy?
That's right. And maybe it just does mean that. Maybe I only got a 69 car so I could get it, put this name, this number 69 on my license plate.
Diabolical.
But he think dirty thoughts. Maybe that's what it is.
So are you still, I think I saw you brought one of your Chargers out here for some car casts years ago. Was that the same Dodge?
Yes, I have one fun special car. I don't have a world-class collection like somebody else I know. I just Leno. Have to,
you know, Jay Leno.
No. You got some very special vehicles.
Yeah, I do, and I'm glad I do, and I'm glad to drive them. And I'll tell you a very weird yet satisfying part of that world, which is we're kind of creeping up on the Laguna Seca vintage race, which is always the big circle on the calendar every year for all the vintage racers. And I'm starting to prep the car I'm going to bring, because you have to prep them. There's always stuff to do before you go out and race them. And there's something really satisfying about the prep part of what I have to do to the car, and then what I'm going to do with the car. Like, I'm going to get in that car and I'm going to race the shit out of it. But there's a lot that goes on before you get it out there. And it's like we were sort of talking before. It's like occupies your mind, has a planning aspect to it, has a sort of mechanical aspect to it, it's also kind of a, like, it's like you're packing for a camping trip. Like, you can't forget things. You can't ignore things. You know, you can have five cans of beans, but if you have no can opener, you're fucked. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of that, but there's something very satisfying about it that more people should do on some level.
It's cool. Listen, how much racing do you do?
Well, I had a few events canceled. I mean, I had a Laguna Seca Trans Am race, a professional race, canceled at the beginning of May. I do three or four events a year, maybe.
I have only done the Toyota races that we did. One, I tried to take out a wall, and I lost.
Oh, no.
The wall won. I had a violent accident, missing a downshift on that back straightaway there. And then the other one, I ran a very aggressive race where I speared you like in a corner. It was totally uncool. That was the year. Remember Adrian?
Brody.
Brody, yes. Yeah, passed a number of us on a caution flag.
Yes.
And it was the best. That was the best race I'd ever run. And I got fourth that year because as I was sitting there on a caution, he just went right by. And I'm like, do we not play by the rules? I know it's a celebrity car race, but are there still not rules? Like, don't we play by those rules?
I remember that as if it was yesterday. And
but you won that race 1 year, didn't you?
I won 2 years.
You won 2 years?
Yeah, it's celebrity in the pro division too, then the next year. but not that year that we raced. I guess 2010 was it? Right. There's an interesting the Adrian Brody part of that equation to me was something I've thought about a lot, and the reason here can be all our takeaway from that. When you're racing, you have a little pink mist, you know, like you're seeing red, the adrenaline's pumping, you're going, you know, and there's flags, and they're always telling you, pay attention to flags, look for the flags. And sometimes the people ahead of you see the flags. Oftentimes the people ahead of you see the flags before you get to the flag station. And there's yellow flags, which is caution, and there's black flags and red flags. There's a whole bunch of flags mean a whole bunch of different things, but you have to look out for them. But there's a part, and this will apply to any part of life, which is if there are a bunch of people ahead of you, and they qualified ahead of you, and they've been ahead of you for 7.5 laps, and you find yourself slingshotting past all of them on a straightaway, driving the same equipment, then that a little bell should go off in your head and think, why was I able to pull up next to a bunch of people who are ostensibly faster than I am and with the same car, the same weight and the same horsepower and the same tires and the same everything across the board? Why was I able just to go past four of them? And that should let you know that maybe they're not at 100%. Maybe yes. They saw the caution flag and maybe they backed off, because anyone who's done that race knows that when you go around the hairpin at the end of the shoreline drive, at the end of the, it doesn't matter if Ayrton Senna and Ayrton Senna had a baby with Mario Andretti and he's in the car next to you. Once you guys are just flat out, nobody's pulling anybody. You're the exact same car. You're going the exact same speed. And it doesn't matter how incredibly skilled the other people are. They make it up in the corners. They make it up braking late and stuff. But if you're just passing people in the straightaway, those people in the straightaway are not on it. And
no.
That probably should have been apparent to Adrian.
Yeah. I should let it go, probably. Hey, did you see?
Me too.
Did you see the Senna doc on Netflix? It's great.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great one.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you one of my favorite stories about that Senna doc is I was talking to Tony Kanaan, I think. I think it was Tony Kanaan.
Yeah, it was Tony Kanaan.
Tony Kanaan's a veteran Indy driver. He's driven at the 500 a lot. He's been in here. I've talked to him about on CarCast and stuff like that. But here's a very interesting thought. He said, oh, well, you know, when I was a kid, I was a good go-kart racer. You got to figure out, Max Pata, how much older Ayrton Senna was than Tony Kanaan. But when Tony Kanaan was maybe Brazilian, a champion race car driver, and he said, Ayrton Senna had a track set up like on his property and at his house or whatever. And every year he would invite the best go-karters in the land, the best young guys, the best 12-year-old, 13-year-old go-karts to come to his house and have a race with him against world champion Ayrton Senna. Senna's 14 years older. So yeah, Senna would have been, you know, 25 in the prime, and Tony Kanaan would have been 11 or whatever, but a champion driver. And they'd have a race. And I said, well, but Tony is as fast as Ayrton Senna was and a champion F1 driver. You were 11 years old. You were probably giving away 20, 30 pounds. You had a weight advantage. You would have been faster in a go-kart with that limited horsepower because Ayrton was a full-grown man and he weighed more. So, he won. Tony Kanaan won. And he said, no, Ayrton, he added weight to all our go-karts. As a fun charity go-kart race on his property with young racers, he added weight to everyone's cart.
Make it fair.
Yeah. Champion for a reason.
It does. No, it's true. It's a huge advantage. Like, the a 9-year-old could whoop up on Ayrton's ass in a go-kart if he was carrying around 50 pounds less weight easily. I just always kind of remember that. I just remember that story, and it made complete sense. Where was that at his house, Maxipana, on his property? Something like that, man.
So you know, are you saying that the 12-year-old still beat Senna with carts that weighed the same?
Tony Kanaan. Now, okay. I didn't verify it, but he did beat him with the weight added. But you also have to understand, all Tony Kanaan is doing at that point is racing go-karts full time, right. And all Ayrton is doing is racing F1 cars full time. So it's you're getting into another piece of equipment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anything, Max Pana? I don't know what that story is.
Yeah, I'm still looking.
All right. Should we take a quick break and come back with Patrick and do the news? Yeah, let's do that right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
The racetrack, sorry, Gina, was on Senna's family farm. Has a family farm with a go-kart track on it.
Just like your childhood.
Well, we had an oval. It was a 30-degree banked oval.
Right.
It wasn't as big as Talladega, but yeah, I get it. Same thing. Race car track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Idyllic.
Right.
So some pretty big news as we record this that just broke not too long before the show started. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison plans to elevate charges against the former police officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck. He now wants to add charges of aiding and abetting as well to the three officers who were just sort of standing around the scene. So this is pretty big. The other officers, it was Tu Thao, Alexander Kung, and Thomas Lane will be charged with aiding and abetting second degree murder. And they spoke on conditions of anonymity, but I'm pretty sure at this point it's everywhere. Chauvin, he was the now former officer who was kneeling on George Floyd's neck. He was arrested last Friday, charged with third degree murder and manslaughter, but that has been upgraded. And I looked into it a little, but I don't know how it varies from state to state. So this is definitely a Mark Garagos conversation and not a Gina Grad conversation. But just a little light research on what's the difference, what's second degree murder. And that's generally defined as intentional murder that lacks premeditation and intended to only cause bodily harm and demonstrate an extreme indifference to human life.
This is the difference between improv and scripted. Basically.
Sure.
Been said many times.
Huh? Sure.
Mark Garagos should defend one of these cops just to make him the least popular person on the planet.
Well, no, to extend his lead at least popular person. He's already there.
Right. Yeah, he's already on Mount Rushmore because I talked to him. We did a special podcast yesterday at Reasonable Doubt because Scott Peterson's going to get a new trial. And Garagos is knee deep in that. But Scott, it's an interesting story. And the reason he's probably going to get a retrial is they had a death penalty juror selection. So they say, so Mark Garagos says, like, you know, when a realtor says location, 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 for him, it's jury, 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 jury selection, jury selection, jury selection. You want to get what you want. You want to get the result you want. It's all about jury selection. And he'll tell you that, you know, black women are tougher on crime or white males are more sympathetic toward X, Y, and Z. Like he knows. And it's all that's why they argue so much over the selection. They got the death penalty. So when you're doing a death penalty case, when the state is seeking the death penalty, when they do the juror selection, you have to be okay with the death penalty. They can't select you if you go, I'm fundamentally against the death penalty. I'm never gonna okay that. They need to know that if you believe this person is guilty, or we can convince you this person is guilty, and we're going for the death penalty, you're going to do that. But what ends up happening is it becomes a kind of self-selecting group that are a lot tougher on crime, sure, as you think about it, you know?
Yeah, if you're for the death penalty, or if you say the question yes, of course you're going to be, you know, tougher.
Imagine if you just took a group where it's like, hey, you like barbecue or are you vegan? You'd get a different group in there with different thoughts toward punishment and crime and that kind of thing. And so they got the death penalty jury, and he got the death penalty, I think. And now he's not, they're not going to, and by the way, I don't know, this notion where everyone gets the death penalty and then, 41 years later, you know,
died of natural causes.
Right. So, okay. But they're going to get a retrial. They think they're going to get a retrial based on that. Yes.
Did Scott Peterson requested it. Has he gotten that? Do we know? Or?
All I know is that there's news and Geragos thinks he may be, you know, he may be on the Masked Singer next year. I don't know. That's
you know, my brother-in-law was a young teacher at University High School in San Diego. He's now professor of Shakespearean literature in Atlanta. And that's where he and my sister and five kids live. In his class, when he was a high school teacher, he had Scott Peterson and Phil Mickelson.
Wow.
And they were both on the golf team together. And my brother-in-law has pictures of him and Scott and Phil Mickelson playing golf together. How weird is that?
Wow. He might be subpoenaed.
Wow.
Well, they had asked Paul at one point after the murders and the conviction if Paul would, since he, you know, he was his teacher for 2 years, if he would write the book, and they offered him good money. But Paul said, I just can't. It's just too dark. I don't want to go in there. I don't want to spend my days in San Quentin talking to Scott Peterson and, you know, with a guy who I know did it, and I'm not going to do that. So he didn't.
Did he know he did it based on understanding aspects of his personality with the evidence?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he knew just from all the evidence that we saw and the guilty verdict by the jury. You know, I don't think he or I or anybody else I know thought, well, he might have gotten a bad rap. Everybody, I think the system in that case worked.
Yeah, well, we'll keep you posted, but it just made me think of, you brought up Geragos, and I just spoke to him yesterday about it. Sorry. He's been on death row since 05, by the way. Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking of arrests, protests in major cities were much calmer the last night than they had been. Many cities intensified their curfews. Authorities in New York, D.C. ordered people off the street while it was still daylight. L.A. County, it was 6 p.m. It was, I think, 4 p.m. in Beverly Hills. Some had 1 p.m. At least 9,300 people have been arrested in protests around the country. That's according to the AP. L.A. has recorded 2,700 arrests, then followed by New York, about 1,500. And it was funny because I'm sure you all saw in the news last night, people literally downtown just waiting around to be arrested. They wanted on record that they were arrested. So people would literally just kind of like, no, take your time. Grab your zip ties.
Yeah, I saw some of that. And then I realized that they're all being ushered on to the modified Greyhound bus, and they're putting 45 people on this bus. Isn't that the worst thing we can do with the pandemic? Putting everyone on a piece of public transportation confined that way? I thought the plan was to do everything but that. I thought
Greyhound buses have great ventilation, though.
Everyone knows this.
Well, Adam,
air filters.
I think you missed part of Barbara Ferrer's speech about that. She says, as long as you don't drop them off at the beach, it will be fine.
Yes, as long as they're not sunning themselves on the beach. Yeah, I'm looking at all these people, and you have to think, the folks I saw, the ones that are waiting to be arrested, these are like housewives in yoga pants. Like, these women were just hanging out, like, go ahead and zip tie me and I'll walk it over here. And I'm watching them do it. And many most of the protesters have masks, but no one's wearing gloves. A lot of the cops are wearing gloves, but many aren't. The whole glove mask thing is sort of catch-as-catch-can with the cops. Like, some of the cops have them. Some of them have them, but they wear them like a kerchief around their neck. Like, it's like, I got this mask, but I just kind of wear it down around my neck. And then none of the protesters are wearing gloves. I remember all the glove talk. We all need to glove up. We need to glove. And half the cops are. Their hands are all over them. I'm not saying this because I'm paranoid. I'm saying this because we were nuts for screaming at everyone to do this 2 weeks ago. The cops are like escorting them with their hands on them. Then they push them all into a giant bus, which is the thing we said to stay away from. And all the people that were being arrested, presumably, were the people who were the tip of the spear of the whole pandemic crisis 2 weeks ago. These were the middle-aged women who were yelling at their teenage boys, you take your shoes off, you come back in the house, you wipe down those shoes. You know, now they're all just cops' hands all over them getting put in a bus. I guess they're done with it.
Yeah.
I guess they're done being scared of it. Okay. Because these are like middle-aged, woke, white women and dudes. They aren't the folks that are, you know, Daytona Beach, you know, spring break partiers. These people were listening over the last few months, I'm guessing. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, Floyd Mayweather has offered to pay for George Floyd's funeral services. The family has accepted. And you think, well, that's very nice. Okay. Anyway, well, he does have a connection, sort of. So he's going to pay for different services in Houston, Minnesota, Charlotte, and another location they haven't figured out yet. And Mayweather thought it was the right thing to do after learning Anzell Jennings, the CEO of his TMT music label, grew up with George. So there is a little bit of a connection there. And he's going to take care of everything, apparently.
Well, good for Floyd. I can't figure out if I love that guy or hate that guy, but I think I like him.
Yeah, I think this tips the scale a bit. Yeah.
John Mayer, Floyd Mayweather, good guys, douchebags. What do we think? I've come around on John Mayer.
Yeah, John Mayer, I'm not convinced is a decent guy.
I am. And I might be moving toward Floyd as well. You know what I mean? Not physically, yep. But emotionally.
Sure. Don't go the arm's reach. No.
Yeah. Patrick, what do you think?
Well, it's a good move. I don't judge anybody. I just keep quiet and listen.
Okay. There we go.
You can have them both. So everybody's doing their part. Everybody's trying to make a difference, push toward equality and better understanding. And that includes Grindr. They, and please don't make me explain Grindr to you because I know that you know, they're removing its ethnicity filter in what they say is a show of support for Black Lives Matter. This is according to CNN. So the gay dating and hookup app announced the change on Monday, saying, "We will continue to fight racism on Grindr, both through dialogue with our community and a zero tolerance policy for racism and hate speech on our platform. As part of this commitment and based on your feedback, we've decided to remove the ethnicity filter from our next release." Apparently, you could pay for an upgrade called extra service that would let you filter in and out of various ethnicities of dudes to grind with.
Is it all, it's all gay, right? Grindr?
Yes.
Well, I can check if they've done that on the app right
here. Yeah, let us know.
I'm on a special, I've got a special app. It's called Mustachio. And we're smaller.
Well, I'll slide in my joke, which is by the time I use one of these dating apps, I'm going to go for one for old folks called Carbon Dating.
It's real good.
65 and above. Only if you're high risk for the COVID-19 virus should you apply to Carbon Dating. Yes.
It's really good.
Breaking hearts and hips since 2017.
So when things really started to pop off in D.C. the other day, news came out that Trump was whisked away to the bunker, presumably by the Secret Service. You know, sometimes I don't know that you have a lot of choice when the Secret Service has a job to do. You know, I get it. And they were, you know, concerned for his personal safety.
Do you think he can be whisked away? I don't think he can. I think if he's in the middle of a story, those guys are going to have to wait. Like if I'm in the middle of a story and someone tries to whisk me away, I'm like, hold on.
Hey, what gives?
Right. Let's give me a couple more minutes here. Right.
Well, he'd like to say his piece about what happened as protesters were gathering outside the White House and he was reportedly taken to the bunker at the request of the Secret Service. He spoke to Fox News and wanted people to know that the reports are false. He wasn't taken anywhere. He simply happened at that moment to want to go down to the bunker and inspect it. It's a coincidence. Please stop making it something it's not.
Really? He said that?
He wanted to...
I got a measure of the drapes.
The news was false and explained that he simply went downstairs to inspect it. He wanted to inspect the bunker.
Jesus, I got to hear that. Do you have it?
I didn't pull it. Sorry, Chris, if you can find it.
That's going to be comical. All right, well, you can find it. Anyway, keep going. We'll find it.
All right. Well, some big news out of USC. They're the first to go on record, Brian. Yeah. The University of Southern California will resume in-person classes for the fall semester. They just announced that face coverings will be mandatory and the schedule's a little different. Semester is going to begin on August 17th. That's a week earlier than originally scheduled. And the university transitioned to online instruction in mid-March, kind of when everybody did. All classes and final exams will end before Thanksgiving, and the fall break will be eliminated. So they're just adjusting everything. They want everybody back in there at their desks.
Well, we're going to look like fucking retards with the close the schools down. That's a dumb fucking idea. We're fucking idiots. We should have never closed the school down. There's no kids get this shit. I had to watch my whole kid's virtual graduation last night. To sit in the living room and watch a stupid thing with all the pictures. And every picture, because I go to my house is in a kind of high achievement neighborhood, and all the pictures would be the headshot of the kid, and then next to them would be like their activity. They'd be playing a violin. They'd be playing a cello. They'd be jumping a horse. My fucking picture of my son eating Hot Pockets and playing Fortnite. Like,
it was holding
like
a video game controller.
Yeah, like my kids weren't doing
anything. Your daughter's texting.
Sonny was
shrugging.
Sitting. Yeah, like, wait on for me. Like, these other kids were like, one kid had to be 50 meters deep, you know, scuba certified, like shot of him in the Caribbean. Every other kid was playing an instrument. Half of them were up on stage, you know, doing some interpretive dance.
There had been one on a horse at least.
Many on horses.
Yeah.
And riding wheelies on mountain bikes, you know. And I was just like, look at that kid. Look at that kid. Look at these kids are kicking. What the hell's going on around here? Yeah, those kids are kicking ass.
Yeah, that had to be a tough watch.
Well, it was weird because it was they did it alphabetically, you know, and I got twins. So once we got past the C's, I was like, can I leave? And like, no, we have to watch the graduation, you know, and I'm like, okay, but.
Yeah, if you were the Zuckercorns, you'd be screwed. Yeah.
I had to cheer on the kids that were coming later on that were friends with my kids.
Oy.
And I mean, it's just one of those things where you go, you got a decision to make. You get up and leave and then sort of pay the price, you know, slowly for the rest of your life, or do you just sit here, ride out the next 32 minutes and be glad you did?
Sonny comes home. It's like, Sonny, I want you to meet your new best friend, Johnny Anderson. I don't even know this kid.
That's right.
It'll pay off. Trust me.
Right.
Yeah, but you're at home, Adam, right? Can't you just fill up a cocktail and then another cocktail?
I said, like, at a certain point, I did say, can I get up and go to the kitchen? Like, once we pass my kids, what are we missing? So I was granted that permission.
Oh, that's nice.
Get up and go to the kitchen. But we did. And then, you know, the teachers, by the way, I don't know when the last time you guys sat through a teacher where it's like, you know, they're sitting there and they're like, there's a lot of, you know, they start talking like, when I met Rebecca, it was in the fourth grade. Her smile could light up a room. Rebecca always thought of others before she thought of herself. It reminds me of a poem that it's like, oh boy, can we move this shit along? Cause like, I'm so fucking used to like, I want to see the Lance Armstrong documentary. I'm watching The Last Dance. You know, like everything to me is like, here we go. Like you forget how far entertainment has come along, and you haven't been in school and seen a non-professional read that teleprompter, man. And it, by the way, you know, G-rated, right down the middle, nothing edgy, nothing going at all. All the platitudes, all the stories about the kids and putting other people before them. And I, as a teacher, I wish I had a class of 30 Rebecca Stevensons. It makes coming to work a joy when I see, it's like, oh boy, you guys forgot about all those assemblies and all that shit you had to sit through. Teachers are windy, man.
Really lights up a room.
Right. Well, think about the job of a teacher, which is like, if you're up on stage, like if you're a stand-up comedian, and you've been up on stage for 4 minutes and you're not hearing any laughter, that's a lifetime. But as a teacher, all you do is stand all day, 7 hours a day in front of a group, get no laughter. You have no metronome. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have this, I got to pace it up, because everyone's bored as shit and they're not going anywhere and they're captive. So your whole fucking metronome, your entertainment metronome has been slowed down to a crawl.
Yeah.
All right.
No argument.
Yeah. New policy. You know, those they can only use words that start with the letters of your name. So if it's Gina, you know, it's like four words: generous,
great,
you know, right? Ingenuity, nubile,
right?
Oh, thank you.
Whatever.
Nubile. Going into the eighth grade. We have the Trump audio from the Kilmer show. Max Pat has found it.
Act. And then the reports were they were so worried they brought you downstairs in the White House to a bunker. What could you tell me Sunday night was like for you and your family?
Well, it was a false report. I wasn't down. I went down during the day, and I was there for a tiny, little short period of time, and it was much more for an inspection. There was no problem during the day. The problem, I saw Leland got whacked pretty good, but that was during the night. And these problems are during the night, not during the day. And I go down, I've gone down two or three times, all for inspection.
I'm convinced.
So he's an inspector.
I'm convinced as well. All right. Apologize, Gina.
I'm very sorry. I really got that wrong. It does inspection work.
Sure.
Okay.
That's a job.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a job.
First off, mildew's an issue in bunkers. I don't know if you guys know that. But
White House is very old.
They're below the frost line, man. You got to get out there and you have to, boots on the ground. You got to inspect.
That's right. And he
has a building background.
That's right.
You think he's built a lot of subterranean parking lots there in Jersey and New York City. Nobody knows the subterranean world like the Trumps do. Number one, foundation and subterranean world as well. These other guys, these Secret Service guys, a bunch of yahoos who played football for the Air Force Academy. Right. What do they know about subterranean construction?
Next to nothing.
Next to nothing. Well, there you go. Well, that's how you know there was an inspection going on.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
So I did say that everyone seems to be doing their part just to help the world move forward right now. That includes Jennifer Aniston. God bless her. She's raising money for coronavirus relief in her own way. Fox News reports that she revealed on her Instagram she's auctioning off a nude portrait of herself that was taken in 1995 at the height of Friends frenzy. You may have seen this picture before. We have it sort of crossing her legs and in front of herself. Mm-hmm. But she's definitely naked. And and 100% of the proceeds, according to her Instagram post, are going to NAF Clinics. That's an organization which provides free coronavirus testing and care nationwide to the medically underserved.
You know, it's a good gig. You know, we always think, you know, fashion photographers cool, especially when the chicks are getting naked and stuff. But the best gig is bathrobe wrangler, because the other guys, you know, he's behind the tripod, he's got a boner, but the bathrobe wrangler guy, that guy gets to see nipple and pube and ass and everything, because his job is just to sort of wait, like the guy gets the tennis balls when they miss the serve, you know? His job is to be in like a 3-point stance with a bathrobe, you know? And then as soon as they go, all right, we're going to break it down, he gets to go up and do the bathrobe, but he gets a fucking front row seat to all that is going on in the nudity.
The hot chick actually walks toward him.
Yeah. The bathtub. I'm going to tell my son, listen, boy, I don't know what you're thinking about at this point in your life, but hot chick, celebrity, fashion shoot, bathrobe wrangler.
That's really good.
Well, and then what do you have to be good at in order to do that? You have to be good at being really good at acting like you're not looking at what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Number one.
Unprofessional.
I'm going to train my boy. I'm going to be like, look, I'm going to get my underpants, and I'm going to put my bathrobe on the other side of the room. Okay? All right, let's go. Let's start working it now. Like Todd Marinovich's dad, except for with bathrobes. You know what I mean?
Marv.
You know, I'm going, you know what? I'm getting rid of the underpants. I'm just going to go full nude because I want him to be ready. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell him you're going to need two things. There's two qualities that I need to bestow upon you. You need to be really good with bathrobes. I need you to really know how to transport a bathrobe. You don't hand me that bathrobe upside down. I'm putting my fucking foot through the arm. No. You work on that. We're going to drill. We're drill hard on that. The other aspect of this game, look, I'm sorry if it's culturally offensive. You have to pass yourself off as being gay. You have to. It's not going to work if you're up there looking like Patrick Warburton talking about nailing some hot trim the night before. It's not going to.
No.
You need to be gay. You pass yourself off as gay, and you really need to handle the terry cloth. Okay?
I like your idea of simulating the game situation by being nude. Like, if a team knows they're going on the road, like where it's going to rain or whatever, they'll turn the sprinklers on, they use the wet footballs, they'll use the pipe-in noise, you know, sometimes.
It is exactly analogous. There's no difference. It's spot on. You're saying exactly what I'm saying. It's not even an analogy. It's what I'm doing.
Pretty much just that, yeah.
That's right. We are going to simulate conditions. There's beach shoots.
Yeah.
You know, that sand. That sand is very different from a footing standpoint than Jennifer Aniston's shoot. That's inside.
Go get the graham crackers from the kitchen. Crumble them up.
That's right. We're going to be outside like the SI photo shoot. You know, they go topless all the time. They paint on. You're going to have to work that. We're going to have conditions. I'm going to turn a fan on. There's offshore breezes. I'm going to put some sand down. You know, I want that kid to be prepared. And when it comes time, you know, when the call is given out, I want him to answer that call.
Yeah.
You're ready, good dad, to answer that call, yeah.
Bathrobe wrangler. You know what I might do? I might even do a version of the bathrobe with like a batting donut on a baseball. I may add weight to it. I may take like a batting donut and tie it around the sash. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to say like a bigger girl model.
No, well, that too. But I'm gonna add weight to the bathrobe because you know what I'm gonna tell him? I'm telling him he's gonna beg me. He's gonna be, Dad, no more weight on the bathrobe. I go, you know what? You're gonna thank me. When you get down to a regulation robe, it's gonna feel like nothing.
Any idiot can carry a normal bathrobe.
That's right. I'm gonna get on this immediately. Patrick, how old are your kids?
The time.
Can I you want me to train them?
Yeah, well, yeah, I work with them already a little bit, but I would love it if I could get you to work with them a little bit. Sometimes, you know, they just don't want to listen to dad. But Talon's 27. He's 6'5".
Well, that's what I'm
doing. 204.
All right.
He's a monster.
How's this gay game? How's this gay game?
Needs work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm here for.
He's got to integrate the description fabulous and a little bit more of what he describes.
Yeah.
And then there's Lexi, and she's 26. And girl, then Shane, 22.
Now, Shane, 22. Male? Sorry?
Yes. Yes. Gabriel's name.
I'll do that. I'll tell you what. I'll teach one of the boys long snapping, and then the other boy I'll teach the bathrobe hustler.
They can flip a coin for it.
Yeah, so ask him. Maybe the 6'5 guy wants to do the long snapping.
There's a good gamut there.
Yeah.
Well, he has a 19-year-old. It might not be too late for him for bathrobe wrangling.
I will do both. We'll do both. You know what? We'll try him out at both. We'll see what the fit is, you know? I don't want to force...
Where's passion lies?
Yeah, where's passion lies? Sorry, go ahead.
While you're working.
Oh, that's a gift. Patrick, please. Yes. You're embarrassing yourself. Well, let's talk about another kid that seems like he could have been on the graduation with Sonny and Natalia. 13-year-old boy graduated from City College in Southern California with his 1-2-3-4th associate's degree, making him the youngest graduate in the school's history. Little Jack Rico of La Mirada, California. He graduated from Fullerton College. Rico started taking classes at the school when he was 11. He spent the last 2 years earning 4 different degrees. With most schools closed during the pandemic, Rico's family's holding a special drive-by celebration for him. And he plans to continue his education in the fall at the University of Nevada, where he's been given a full scholarship. So little Doogie there will be 14 and going to the University of Nevada.
Yeah.
He's the exact same.
Sorry, wait, you broke up, Patrick. What'd you say?
He's the exact opposite of me.
Yeah. Now look, maybe things work for him academically. Maybe they don't. Maybe the way of the robe is not in his future, but maybe it is. I'm not telling him what direction to go, but I'm saying I can teach him how to hustle that robe.
Yeah.
That's all. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Let me hit JB Weld here. DIY projects. You want to get through those DIY projects. You want to save money. You want to avoid paying a repairman. Big or small repairs, home or a garage. Ordinary household glue. Well, it's ordinary. It has the word ordinary. If you need it to be strong, you need a better choice. And that's JB Weld. JB Weld, they're a great sponsor. I've known these guys for a lot of years. I know the owner personally. And I hung out with them at SEMA, actually, a couple years ago. And I got to talking to them. And I said, I use your product all the time. So why don't you come on board? And they said, fine, JB Weld, man. I keep that in your toolbox, your kitchen drawer, craft room, metal, wood, plastic, or more. Don't glue it. JB Weld it. Available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It is JB Weld. All right, let's see. Me doing a live Q&A, Adam Carolla en masse. That's this Monday, June 8th at 12 p.m. Central. So RSVP at adamunmasked.com. And book's coming out. Pre-order it. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. That's coming out on the 16th. Couple Nashville Zanies, June 12th and 13th, doing some stand-up and some live pod there. So get some tickets and come say hi. Patrick Warburton, Inheritance, name of the movie, available on Amazon, iTunes, and on demand. And also Space Force, available, as we know, on Netflix as well. Did we cover it, Patrick? You good?
All good. Thanks, Adam. You're awesome.
Thanks, man. Love talking to you. We'll talk soon. And check out my stand-up on the YouTube page. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Patrick Warburton and Billy and Gina and Bald saying, oh, Christy saying, mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And be sure you pre-order Adam Carolla's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's out June 16th and available at adamcarolla.com.